This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Dear Evan Hansen, the novel. Written by Val Emick with Stephen Levinson, Benj Pasek, and Justin Paul. Read by Ben Levi Ross, Mike Feist, and Mallory Bechtel.
I made my exit. Better to burn out right than to fade away. Kurt Cobain said that in his letter. I watched a video about all the famous ones. Ernest Hemingway, Robin Williams, Virginia Woolf, Hunter S. Thompson, Sylvia Plath, David Foster Wallace, Van Gogh. I'm not comparing myself, trust me. Those people actually made an impact. I did nothing. I couldn't even write a note. Burning is the right way to paint it. You feel yourself getting so hot day after day, hotter and hotter. It gets to be too much, even for stars. At some point, they fizzle out or explode, cease to be. But if you're looking up at the sky, you don't see it that way. You think all those stars are still there. Some aren't. Some are already gone, long gone. I guess now so am I. My name. That was the last thing I wrote on another kid's cast. Not quite a goodbye note, but hey, I made my little mark on a broken limb. Seems about right. Poetic, if you think about it. And thinking is just about all I can do now.
Part 1. Chapter 1. Dear Evan Hansen. That's how all my letters begin. First, the dear part, because that's just what you write at the top of any letter. That's standard. Next comes the name of the person you're writing to. In this case, it's me. I'm writing to myself. So, yeah. Evan Hansen. Evan is actually my middle name. My mom wanted me to be Evan, and my dad wanted me to be Mark, which is his name. My dad won the battle, according to my birth certificate, but my mom won the war. She has never called me anything other than Evan. As a result, neither has my dad. Spoiler alert, my parents are no longer together. I'm only Mark on my driver's license, which I never use, or when I'm filling out job applications, or when it's the first day of school, like today. My new teachers will call out Mark during attendance, and I will have to ask each one to please call me by my middle name. Naturally, this will have to be done when everyone else has vacated the room. There are 1,010,000 things from the subatomic to the cosmic that can rattle my nerves on a daily basis. And one of those things is my initials. M-E-H. Like the word. Meh. Meh is basically a shoulder shrug. And that pretty much sums up the reaction I get from society at large. As opposed to the surprise of oh, or the wow of ah, or the hesitation of or the confusion of huh. Meh is pure indifference. Take it or leave it. Doesn't matter. No one cares. Mark Evan Hansen? Meh. But I'd rather think of myself as eh. Which is more like seeking approval, waiting for confirmation. Like, how about that Evan Hansen, eh? My mom says I'm a true Pisces. The symbol for a Pisces is two fish tied together trying to swim in opposite directions. She's into all that astrology crap. I installed an app on her phone that displays her daily horoscope. Now she'll leave me handwritten messages around the house saying things like, "Step outside your comfort zone." Or she'll cram the day's message into our conversations. Take on a new challenge. A business venture with a friend looks promising. It's all nonsense, if you ask me. But I guess for my mom, her horoscopes give her some hope and guidance, which is what my letters are supposed to give me. Speaking of which, after the greeting comes the actual meat of the letter, the body. My first line is always the same. Today is going to be an amazing day, and here's why. Positive outlook yields positive experience. That's the basic concept behind this letter writing assignment. I tried to get out of it at first. I told Dr. Sherman, I don't think a letter to myself is going to help much. I wouldn't even know what to write. He perked up, leaning forward in his leather chair instead of casually sitting back as he usually did. You don't have to know. That's the point of the exercise. To explore. For example, you could start with something like, today is going to be an amazing day and here's why. Then go from there. Sometimes I feel like therapy is total bullshit, and other times I think the real problem is that I can never get myself to fully buy in. Anyway, I ended up taking his advice, verbatim, one less thing to think about, because the rest of the letter is tricky. The first line was just an opening statement, and now I have to support that statement in my own words. I have to prove why today is going to be an amazing day when all evidence suggests otherwise. Every day that came before today was definitely not amazing, so why would I think today would be any different? Truth? I don't. So it's time to power up my imagination, make sure that every single molecule of creativity is wide awake and pitching in. It takes a molecular village to write an amazing pep talk. Because today all you have to do is just be yourself. But also confident. That's important. And interesting. Easy to talk to, approachable, and don't hide either. Reveal yourself to others, not in a pervy way, don't disrobe, just be you. The true you. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. The true me. What does that even mean? It sounds like one of those faux philosophical lines you'd hear in a black and white cologne commercial. But okay, whatever. Let's not judge. As Dr. Sherman would say, we're here to explore. Exploring. I have to assume this true me is better at life. Better at people. And less timid, too. For example, I bet he never would have passed up the chance to introduce himself to Zoe Murphy at the jazz band concert last year. He wouldn't have spent all that time deciding which word best captured his feelings about her performance, but also didn't make him come off like a stalker. Good. Great. Spectacular. Luminescent, enchanting, solid. And then, after finally settling on very good, end up not speaking to her at all because he was too worried his hands were sweaty. What difference did it make that his hands were sweaty? It's not like she would have demanded to shake his hand. If anything, it was probably her hands that were sweaty after all that guitar playing. Besides, my hands only got sweaty after I thought about them getting sweaty. So if anything, I made them get sweaty. And obviously, this true Evan would never do something so profoundly sad. Great, I'm doing it again. Willing my hands to get sweaty. Now I have to wipe down my keyboard with my blanket. And I just typed out, and now my arm is sweating too. The sweat will end up sitting under my cast, no air getting in, and soon my cast will take on that smell. The kind of smell I don't want anyone at school to catch, even the slightest whiff of. Especially on the first day of my senior year. Damn you, fake Evan Hansen. You really are exhausting. Deep breath. I reach into my bedside drawer. I already took my Lexapro this morning, but Dr. Sherman says it's fine to take an Ativan too, if things get really overwhelming. I swallow the Ativan down, relief on the way. That's the problem with writing these letters. I start off on a direct route, but I always end up taking detours, wandering into the sketchy neighborhoods of my brain where nothing good ever happens. So you just decided not to eat last night? It's my mom, standing over me, holding the $20 bill I didn't use. I shut my laptop and shove it under my pillow. I wasn't hungry. Come on, honey, you need to be able to order dinner for yourself if I'm at work. You can do it all online now. You don't even have to talk to anyone. But see, that's not true, actually. You have to talk to the delivery person when they come to the door. You have to stand there while they make change, and they always pretend like they don't have enough singles, so you're forced to decide on the spot whether to tip less than you planned or more. And if you tip less, you know they'll curse you under their breath as they walk away, so you just tip them extra and you end up poor. Sorry, I say. Don't be sorry, it's just, this is what you're supposed to be working on with Dr. Sherman. Talking to people. Engaging. Not avoiding. Didn't I just write that exact thing in my letter? about revealing myself, not hiding? I know all this already. I don't need her to keep repeating it. It's like the sweaty hands thing. The more you acknowledge the problem, the worse it gets. Now she's circling my bed, arms crossed, scanning the room like it's somehow different from when she was last in here. Like there's a new answer to the great Evan conundrum waiting on my dresser or hanging on my wall that she can finally find if she looks hard enough. Believe me, considering how much time I spend in this room, if the answer were in here, I would have spotted it already. I slide my legs off the bed and pull on my sneakers. "Speaking of Dr. Sherman," she says, "I made you an appointment with him for this afternoon." "Today? Why? I'm seeing him next week." "I know," she says, staring down at the 20 in her hands. "But I thought maybe you could use something a little sooner." Because I chose to skip dinner one night? I should have just pocketed the money so she wouldn't have known. But that would be like stealing from her, and karma's a bitch. Maybe it's more than just the unused 20. Maybe I'm giving off an extra worrisome vibe that I'm unaware of. I stand up and check myself in the mirror. I try to see what she sees. Everything looks to be in order. Shirt buttons are lined up. Hair has been tamed. I even took a shower last night. I haven't been taking as many showers lately because it's such a pain to have to cover my cast. First with the plastic wrap, then the shopping bag and duct tape. It's not like I get dirty anyway. Ever since breaking my arm, I basically just sequester myself in my room all day. Besides, nobody at school will be paying attention to how I look. There's something else happening in the mirror that I'm only noticing now. I'm biting my nails. I've been biting them this whole time. Okay, the truth is, I've been dreading this day for weeks. After the safe isolation of summer, returning to school always feels like sensory overload. Watching friends reunite with their bro hugs and high-pitched screeches, the cliques forming in corners as if all parties had been notified in advance where to meet, bent over laughter at what must have been the funniest joke ever told. I can navigate my way through all that because it's familiar to me by now. It's the stuff I can't predict that concerns me. I barely had a handle on the way things were last year, and now there will be so much newness to absorb. New wardrobes, tech, vehicles, new hairstyles, colors, lengths, new piercings and tattoos, new couples, whole new sexual orientations and gender identities, new classes, students, teachers, so much change. And everyone just marches on like nothing's different. But for me, every new year feels like starting from zero. My mom is also visible in my mirror, the tassel of her personalized keychain dangling from her pocket. Over the years, I've elevated many crummy gifts, mugs, pens, phone cases, by simply slapping Mom or Heidi on there somewhere. Poking around my room in her scrubs, she looks more like a forensic scientist than a nurse, a very tired forensic scientist. She was always the young mom, because she had me right after college, but I'm not sure the title still applies. Lately, there's this permanent fatigue in her eyes that seems less to do with how much sleep she manages to squeeze in each night and more to do with her finally starting to look her age. "What happened to all your pins?" she says. I turn and face the map on the wall. When I started working at Ellison State Park this summer, I got into the idea of trying to hike all the best trails in the country. Precipice Trail in Maine, Angel's Landing in Utah, Kulalau Trail in Hawaii, Harding Ice Field in Alaska. I had them all marked on my map with different colored pins. But after how the summer ended, I decided to take them all down. Except one. "I thought I'd focus on one at a time," I say. "The first one I'm hoping to do is West Maroon Trail." "And that's in Colorado?" my mom asks. She can see it on the map, but still she needs confirmation. I give it to her. "Yes." The breath she takes is painfully showy. Her shoulders practically lift up and touch her ears before they drop down even lower than they hung before. Colorado is where my dad lives. Dad is a word you have to be careful about using in our house, and the same goes for any word that makes you think of my dad, like Mark, or in this case, Colorado. Mom turns away from the map and presents me with a face that's meant to be brave and carefree, but looks exactly not those things. She's wounded, but still standing. That makes two of us. I'll pick you up right after school, she says. Have you been writing those letters Dr. Sherman wants you to do? The pep talks? You really have to keep up with those, Evan. I used to write a letter every single day, but over the summer I slacked off. I'm pretty sure Dr. Sherman told my mom, which is why she's been nagging me about them lately. I was just working on one, I tell her, relieved to not have to lie. Good. Dr. Sherman is going to want to see it. I know. I'll finish it at school. Those letters are important, honey. They help you build your confidence, especially on the first day of school. Ah, yes. Another clue for why she thought today in particular warranted a visit to Dr. Sherman. I don't want another year of you sitting home alone on your computer every Friday night. You just have to find a way to put yourself out there. I'm trying. It's not like I'm not trying. She spots something on my desk. Hey, I know. She pulls a Sharpie from the cup. Why don't you go around today and ask the other kids to sign your cast? That would be the perfect icebreaker, wouldn't it? I can't think of anything worse. That's like panhandling for friends. Maybe I should find an emaciated puppy to sit on the corner with me. Really dial up the sympathy. It's too late. She's in my face. Evan? Mom, I can't. She presents the Sharpie. Seize the day. Today is the day to seize the day. This sounds like a horoscope. You don't have to add today. Seize the day already means seize today. Whatever. You're the wordsmith. I'm just saying, go get him, eh? Without meeting her eyes, I sigh and take the Sharpie. Eh. She heads for the door, and just when I think I'm in the clear, she turns with an uneasy smile. I'm proud of you already. Oh, good. Her smile sags a bit, and she walks off. What am I supposed to say? She tells me she's proud, but her eyes tell a different story. She ponders me like I'm a stain on the tub she can't wipe clean no matter what product she uses. Proud of me? I don't see how that's possible. So let's just keep lying to each other. It's not like I totally mind the sessions with Dr. Sherman. Sure, our conversations are scheduled, inorganic, and typically one-sided, but there's some comfort in sitting down and talking with another human being. You know, besides my mom, who's so busy with work and classes that she's hardly ever around and who never quite hears what I'm saying even when she's listening, and is also my mom. I call my dad every once in a while, on the few occasions where I have news worth sharing, but he's pretty busy. The problem with talking to Dr. Sherman, though, is I'm bad at it. I sit there struggling to squeeze out even the simplest monosyllabic answers. I assume that's why he suggested I write these letters to myself. He told me it might be a better way of extracting my feelings and could also help me learn to be a little easier on myself, but I'm pretty sure it makes things easier for him, too. I open my computer and read what I've written so far. Dear Evan Hansen. Sometimes these letters do the opposite of what they're intended to do. They're supposed to keep my glass half full, but they also remind me that I'm not like everyone else. No one else at my school has an assignment from their therapist. No one else even has a therapist, probably. They don't snack on Ativan. They don't shift and fidget when people come too close to them, or talk to them, or even look at them. And they definitely don't make their mother's eyes well up with tears when they're just sitting there not doing anything. I don't need reminding. I know I'm not right. Believe me, I know. Today is going to be an amazing day. Maybe, if I just stay here in my bedroom, then it might actually come true. Just be yourself. Yeah, sure. Okay. Chapter 2. I'm finished at my locker, but I'm still standing here, pretending to look for something. There's too much time before the bell rings, and if I shut my locker now, I'll be forced to hang around. I'm awful at hanging around. Hanging around requires confidence and the right clothing, and a bold but casual stance. Robbie Oxman, a.k.a. Rox, is a master hanger around her, always whipping his hair out of his face and keeping his legs shoulder distance apart. He even knows what to do with his hands, four fingers inside his jean pockets and thumbs through his belt loops. Brilliant. I want to do what Dr. Sherman and my mother keep asking me to do, engage, but it's not in my DNA. When I walked onto the bus this morning, everyone was either talking to their friends or staring down at their phones. What am I supposed to do? Fact, I once did a search for how to make friends, and I clicked on one of the videos that came up, and I swear I didn't realize until the very end that I was watching a car commercial. That's why I prefer to keep my back to everything. Unfortunately, I have to head to class now. I shut my locker and command my body to rotate exactly 180 degrees. I keep my head low enough to avoid eye contact, but high enough to see where I'm going. Kayla Mitchell is showing off her Invisalign to Freddie Lynn. I could ask one of them to sign my cast. But no offense, I don't need signatures from kids who register as low as I do on the relevance meter. I pass by the twins, not actually related, they just dress alike, and the Russian spy. At least I don't have a nickname, that I know of. Vanessa Wilton is talking on the phone, probably to her agent. She's been in local commercials. Up ahead, two jocks are literally wrestling on the ground. And there's rocks outside Mr. Bailey's class. He's got one thumb in his belt loop and the other hand on Kristen Caballero's waist. Last I heard, Kristen was with Mike Miller, but he graduated last year. On to the next, I see. They're making out now. It's very wet. Don't stare. I make a pit stop at the water fountain. I've already forgotten the plan. Let people see you. How am I supposed to do that? Carry around sparklers? Hand out free condoms? I'm just not the seize-the-day type. Over the running water, I hear a voice. I think the voice could possibly be talking to me. I stop drinking. There is indeed a person standing next to me. Her name is Alana Beck. "How was your summer?" she says. Alana sat in front of me in pre-calc last year, but we never spoke. Are we speaking now? I'm not convinced. My summer? Mine was productive, Alana says. I did 3 internships and 90 hours of community service. I know. Wow. Yeah, that's wow. That's even though I was so busy, I still made some great friends. Or, well, acquaintances more like. There was this girl named Clarissa, or Carissa. I couldn't hear her that well. And then Brian, with a Y. And my advisor at National Black Women's Leadership Training Council, Miss P, and also... The only time I heard Alana's voice last year was when she was asking or answering questions, which she'd do incessantly. Mr. Swathchild would ignore her hand at first until he realized it was the only hand up, and he had no choice but to call on her. Again. She's got bravado I'll never have. Not to mention a very committed smile. But in another way, Alana Beck and I have a lot in common. Even with her class participation and her gigantic backpack always slamming into people, she goes around this school the same way I do, unnoticed. Seize the day, Mom says. Fine, here goes. I lift my cast up. Do you maybe want to... Oh my God, Alana says. What happened to your arm? I unzip my backpack and dig around for my Sharpie. I broke it. I was... Oh, really? My grandma broke her hip getting into the bathtub in July. That was the beginning of the end, the doctor said, because then she died. Oh, that's terrible. I know, right? She says, her smile never wavering. Happy first day! She turns and her backpack knocks the Sharpie out of my hand. I bend down to pick it up, and when I'm upright again, Alana is gone and Jared Kleinman is in her place. Is it weird to be the first person in history to break their arm from jerking off too much, or do you consider that an honor? Jared says much too loudly. Paint me the picture. You're in your bedroom. Lights off. Smooth jazz in the background. You've got Zoe Murphy's Instagram up on your weird off-brand phone. Jared and I have a history. His mother sells real estate. She's the one who found my mom and me a new place to live after my dad left. For a few years there, the Kleinmans would have us at their swim club in the summertime, and we'd go to their house for dinner, once for Rosh Hashanah. I even went to Jared's bar mitzvah. Do you want to know what really happened? I ask. Not really, Jared says. Something's driving me to say it, to share it with someone, maybe just to set the record straight. No, I was not stalking Zoe Murphy's Instagram. Not on this particular occasion. What happened is, I was climbing a tree and I fell.
You fell out of a tree? What are you, like an acorn?
You know how I was working as an apprentice park ranger this summer?
No, why would I know that?
Well, anyway, I'm sort of a tree expert now. Not to brag. But I saw this incredible 40-foot-tall oak tree, and I started climbing it, and then I just...
fell, Jared says.
Yeah, except it's a funny story, because there was this solid 10 minutes after I fell, when I was just lying there on the ground, waiting for someone to come get me. Any second now, I kept saying to myself, any second now, here they come.
Did they?
No, nobody came. That's what's so funny.
Jesus Christ!
He looks embarrassed for me. But hey, I'm in on the joke. I know how pathetic it sounds that I waited there on the ground for someone to come and help me. I'm trying to have a laugh at my own inadequacy, but as usual, my delivery is way off. There's a lot going on in my head right now. Grandmothers are passing away, and I've got dark spots on my shirt from the fountain spraying everywhere, and I still haven't made it to first period, where I'll have to answer to Mark for at least 45 minutes. This is what I get for trying to have a conversation with Jared Kleinman, who once laughed during a lesson on the Holocaust. He swore he was laughing at something unrelated to the horrific black and white photos that the rest of us were gasping at, and I believe him, I guess, but still, I'm pretty sure the guy doesn't have a conscience. Jared hasn't walked away yet, so I ask a question that I stole straight from Alana Beck's mouth. How was your summer?
Well, my bunk dominated in Capture the Flag, and I got to second base below the bra with this girl from Israel who's going to, like, be in the army. So, yeah, does that answer your question?
Actually, the Sharpie is still in my hand. I don't know why I'm even bothering with this cast signing thing, but here I go anyway. Do you want to sign my cast? He laughs. He laughs right in my face.
Why are you asking me?
I don't know. Because we're friends?
We're family friends, Jared says. That's a whole different thing, and you know it.
Is it? I've played video games on Jared's basement couch. I even changed out of my bathing suit in front of him. He's the one who informed me that it's not normal to wear your underwear under your bathing suit. Fine, we don't hang out like that anymore, and we only ever spent time together with our families around, but those memories still count for something, right? A family friend is still a friend, technically.
Tell your mom to tell my mom I was nice to you, or else my parents won't pay for my car insurance, Jared says, and walks away.
Jared is a dick, but he's my dick. I mean, no, that's not what I mean, not like that. I just mean that he's not the worst ever. He acts like he's the shit, but he's not totally convincing. His tortoiseshell glasses and beach bum shirts don't quite fit him right, and the oversized headphones he keeps around his neck aren't even plugged in. That being said, his whole look is far better than I could pull off. I make it to class just as the bell rings and find a seat. I prefer to be in the row closest to the door at the back of the room, out of sight and near the exit. As I'm getting situated, I feel a slight sense of accomplishment. No names yet on my cast, but I've already interacted with more people than I did the entire first month of school last year. How's that for seizing the day? Who knows? Maybe this will be an amazing day after all. Chapter 3. Nope. Not amazing. First period was fine, meaning nothing terrible happened. Same for my next few classes. All name corrections from Mark to Evan were successful. I was feeling decent, even positive. But then, lunch. I've never loved lunch. There's not enough structure. Everyone's free to go where they please, and where they please is nowhere near me. I tend to claim a spot at a forgotten corner table with the other randoms, force-feeding myself the sun butter and jelly sandwich I've packed in my bag every day for a decade. What I eat is the only thing about lunch I can control. But sitting in the corner now feels like hiding, and I promised myself I wouldn't hide. Not today. I spot Jared carrying his tray through the food line. He usually sits by himself and codes on his laptop. I wait for him at the cash register. He's thrilled to see me.
"You again?" Jared says.
My instinct is to let him walk away, but for once I tell my instinct to fuck off.
"I was thinking maybe I could sit with you today."
Jared looks about ready to vomit. Before he can officially deny me, he disappears behind a dark shroud. Passing between us is the mysterious creature known as Connor Murphy. Connor cuts through our conversation, head low, unaware of his surroundings. Jared and I watch him go.
"Love the new hair length," Jared mumbles to me. "Very school shooter chic."
I cringe. Connor halts, his heavy boots landing with a thud. His eyes, what little I can see of them through his overgrown hair, are two steely blue death rays. He definitely heard Jared. I guess he's not as oblivious as he seems. Connor isn't moving, isn't speaking, just staring. Everything about this kid makes me shiver. He's permafrost. Maybe that's why he's wearing all those thick layers even though it's still technically summer. Jared may be brazen, but he's not stupid.
"I was kidding," he tells Connor. "It was a joke."
"Yeah, no, it was funny," Connor says. "I'm laughing, can't you tell?" Jared isn't looking so cocky anymore. "Am I not laughing hard enough for you?" Connor says. Jared begins to laugh nervously, which makes me laugh nervously. I can't help it.
"You're such a freak," Jared says to Connor, darting away.
I should be following Jared, but I can't move my legs. Connor steps to me. "What the fuck are you laughing at?"
"I don't know. I do stupid things when I'm nervous, which means I'm constantly doing stupid things."
"Stop fucking laughing at me," Connor says. "I'm not," I say, which is true. I'm no longer laughing. I'm officially petrified.
"You think I'm a freak?"
"No, I don't."
"I'm not the freak. I didn't."
"You're the fucking freak." A bomb blast. I'm on the ground. Connor is standing above. Not a real bomb. Connor's two arms, weighed down by all those black bracelets, slammed my chest and knocked me off my feet. Before he storms off, I see that he looks as shaken as I feel. I sit up and lift my hands off the floor, the dust from so many sneakers clinging to my moist palms. People walk by, stepping around me, some offering unhelpful commentary, but it doesn't matter. I can't hear them. I can't move either. I don't want to. Why should I? It's like when I fell from that tree in Ellison Park. I just lay there. I should have stayed under that tree forever. Just like I should have stayed home today. What's wrong with hiding? At least it's safe. Why do I keep doing this to myself?
"Are you all right?"
I look up. Shock. Double shock. One shock because it's the second girl who's spoken to me today. Two shocks because it's Zoe Murphy. Yes, the one and only.
"I'm fine," I say.
"I'm sorry about my brother," she says. "He's a psychopath."
"Yeah, no, we were just messing around." She nods the way my mother might when she's dealing with a delusional patient. That is me.
"So," Zoe says, "is it comfortable down there on the floor, or..."
"Oh yeah, I'm on the floor. Why am I still on the floor?" I stand up and wipe my hands on my pants.
"Evan, right?" Zoe says.
"Evan?"
"That's your name?"
"Oh, yeah, Evan. It's Evan. Sorry."
"Why are you sorry?" Zoe says.
Well, just because you said Evan, and then I repeated it, which is so annoying when people do that.
"Oh," she puts out her hand.
"Well, I'm Zoe." I wave my hand instead of shaking hers because of all the dust stuck to my sweaty palm, and I immediately regret doing it. I've somehow made this exchange even more awkward than it already was. "No, I know."
"You know?" Zoe says.
"No, I mean, I know you. I know who you are. I've seen you play guitar in jazz band. I love jazz band. I love jazz. Not all jazz, but definitely jazz band jazz. That's so weird. I'm sorry."
"You apologize a lot."
"I'm sorry." "Damn." She lets out a laugh. I don't know why I'm so nervous, other than the fact that I'm always nervous and I just got thrown to the ground by a burnout who happens to be related to Zoe by blood. But why does Zoe in particular do this to me? It's not like she's this gorgeous popular girl or anything. She's just normal. Not normal as in boring. Normal as in real. I guess it's because I've waited for this moment, the chance to talk to her for so long. It goes back to the first time I ever saw her perform. I knew she was a year below me. I'd seen her around school plenty of times, but I didn't really see her until that one concert. If you asked anyone else who was in the audience that day, and there weren't many of us, what they thought of the guitarist's performance, they probably would have said, "Who?" The horn players were the stars, followed by the super tall bass player and the look-at-me drummer. Zoe, meanwhile, was way off to the side. She didn't have a solo or anything. She didn't stand out in any overt way. Maybe it's because she was in the background that I connected so strongly to her. To me, there was no one else on stage. Just this one spotlight shining down on her. I can't explain why it happened that way, but it did. I've watched her perform many times since. I've studied her. I know her guitar is eggshell blue. Her strap has lightning bolts on it, and the cuffs of her jeans are covered in stars scribbled in pen. She taps her right foot when she plays and keeps her eyes shut tight, and this sort of half-smile forms on her face. "Do I have something on my nose?" Zoe says. "No. Why?" "You're staring at me." "Oh, I'm sorry." I said it again. Zoe nods. "My lunch is getting cold." Something tells me she's done this a million times before. Arrived to clean up one of her brother's messes. Now that she's confirmed that I'm okay, she can go about her day. But I don't want to be just another mess to her. "Wait," I say. She turns back. "What?" "Reveal yourself, Evan. Say something. Anything. Tell her you like Miles Davis or Django Reinhardt, one of those famous jazz guys. Ask her if she likes them too. Tell her about that documentary you streamed recently about EDM and how you tried to make your own EDM song afterwards and the song was atrocious, obviously, because you have no musical talent. Just give her something to hold on to. A piece of yourself that she can carry with her. Ask her to sign your cast. Do not shy away. Do not be meh. Do not do what you know full well you're about to do." I look down at the floor. "Nothing," I say. She lingers a moment, and then her toes seem to wave goodbye inside her worn-in Converse as she turns and walks away. I watch her go, step by step. When I finally get around to eating lunch, I find that the spill I took not only flattened my already thin ego, but also my loyal sun butter and jelly sandwich. My mom texts me when I'm in the computer lab, asking me to call her. I'm thankful for the interruption. I've been staring at a blank screen for 20 minutes now. I'm trying to finish this letter for Dr. Sherman. When I started seeing him back in April, I'd write a letter every morning before school. It became part of my daily routine. Every week I'd show Dr. Sherman my letters, and although I didn't always believe in what I'd written, I felt a sense of accomplishment just seeing him hold that stack of papers in his hands. That was me, right there. My work. My writing. But after a while, Dr. Sherman stopped asking to see my letters, and pretty soon I stopped writing them too. It's not like the letters were really working. They weren't actually changing my mind. Summer brought a new routine, and writing those letters just wasn't part of it. Dr. Sherman sensed that I had been skipping my assignments. Now he's asking to see my letters again. And if I don't finish this one, I'll have nothing to show him later today. I've been through that before. Shown up without a letter when he was expecting one. One time, I arrived at a session empty-handed. I'd forgotten my letter at home. And I'll never forget the look Dr. Sherman gave me. He tried to keep his face neutral, but he couldn't fool me. After all these years, I'm a wizard at detecting even the slightest hint of disappointment in others, and any amount at all is unbearable. I'll have to show Dr. Sherman something, and all I have so far is, Dear Evan Hansen. I erased all the stuff from this morning. All that crap about being true to myself. I just wrote it because I thought it sounded good. Of course it sounded good. Fantasies always sound good. But they're no help when reality comes and shoves you to the ground. When it trips up your tongue and traps the right words in your head. When it leaves you to eat lunch by yourself. There was one silver lining to the day, though. Zoe Murphy not only talked to me, but she knew who I was. She knew my name. As with black holes or stereograms, my brain cannot compute this. As hopeful as I feel after our brief interaction, I worry that I squandered the moment and that there may never be another. I call my mom. After a few rings, I'm ready to hang up, but then she answers. Honey, hi, she says. Listen, I know I was supposed to pick you up for your appointment, but I'm stuck at the hospital. Erica called in with the flu, and I'm the only other nurse's aide on today, so I volunteered to pick up her shift. It's just, they announced more budget cuts this morning, so anything I can do to show that I'm part of the team, you know? Sure, I know. She's always part of the team. The thing is, she's supposed to be part of my team. My mom is more like a coach who gives impressive pre-game speeches, and then when the whistle blows and it's time for me to step onto the field, she's nowhere to be found. It's fine, I say. I'll take the bus. Perfect, that's perfect. Maybe I'll skip the session with Dr. Sherman. I never asked for it in the first place. I'm finished seizing the day. I'm going straight from here to class, so I won't be home until late, so please eat something. We've got those Trader Joe's dumplings in the freezer. Maybe. Did you finish writing that letter yet? Dr. Sherman's expecting you to have one. It's official. The two of them definitely talked. Yeah, no, I already finished it. I'm in the computer lab right now printing it out. I hope it was a good day, sweetheart. Yeah, it was. Really great. Just two periods left. Great. That's great. I hope it's the beginning of a great year. I think we both could use one of those, huh? Yes, is the answer, but I barely have time to think it, let alone say it. Shit, honey, I have to run. Bye, I love you. Her voice disappears. I'm left with a loneliness so overpowering it threatens to seep from my eyes. I have no one. Unfortunately, that's not fantasy. That's all natural, 100% organic, unprocessed reality. There's Dr. Sherman, but he charges by the hour. There's my father, but if he really gave a shit, he wouldn't have moved to the other side of the country. There's my mom, but not tonight, or last night, or the night before. Seriously, when it actually counts, who is there? In front of me on my computer screen is just one name, Evan Hansen. Me. That's all I have. I place my fingers on the keyboard. No more lies. Dear Evan Hansen, it turns out this wasn't an amazing day after all. This isn't going to be an amazing week or an amazing year, because why would it be? Oh, I know. Because there's Zoe. And all my hope is pinned on Zoe, who I don't even know and who doesn't know me. But maybe if I did. Maybe if I could just talk to her, really talk to her, then maybe... maybe nothing would be different at all. I wish that everything was different. I wish that I was a part of something. I wish that anything I said mattered to anyone. I mean, let's face it. Would anybody even notice if I disappeared tomorrow? Sincerely, your best and most dearest friend, me. I don't even bother reading it back. I hit print and pop up from my chair, feeling energized. Something happened just now when I was writing. What a concept. Saying exactly what you feel without stopping to second guess? I mean, now I'm second guessing. But as I was writing it, and as I was sending it to the printer, no hesitation. Just one fluid motion. Except, it's pretty clear that the letter should be torn up immediately and thrown in the garbage. I can't show it to Dr. Sherman.
He keeps asking me to seek optimism, and this letter is nothing but hopelessness and despair. I know I'm supposed to share my feelings with Dr. Sherman and make my mom happy, but they don't want my actual feelings. They just want me to be okay, or at least say that I am. I turn around, eager to reach the printer, but instead, I almost run into Connor Murphy. I flinch, preparing for another shove, but he keeps his hands to himself.
So, Connor says, what happened?
Excuse me? He glances down.
Your arm?
I look down as if to check what he's referring to. Oh, this? Well, I say, I was working as an apprentice park ranger this summer at Ellison Park, and one morning I was doing my rounds, and I saw this amazing 40-foot-tall oak tree, and I started climbing it, and I just fell. But it's actually a funny story, because there was a good 10 minutes after I fell, when I was just lying there on the ground, waiting for someone to come get me. Any second now, I kept thinking, any second now. But yeah, nobody came. So,
Connor just stares at me.
Then, realizing I'm finished, he begins to laugh. It's the reaction I pretended to want from my funny story. But now that it's happening, I have to admit, it's not at all what I was going for. Maybe this is payback for me laughing at Connor before, but something about it doesn't sound like revenge.
You fell out of a tree? Connor says. That is the saddest fucking thing I've ever heard.
I can't argue with him there. Maybe it's the few light whiskers on his chin, or the smell of smoke on his hoodie, or the black nail polish, or the fact that I heard he got expelled from his last school for drugs, but Connor seems like he's way older than me. Like I'm a kid and he's a man. Which is sort of weird because standing next to him, I realize he's pretty scrawny. And if he weren't wearing those boots, I might even be taller than him.
Take my advice, Connor says. You should make up a better story.
Yeah, probably, I admit. Connor drops his gaze to the floor.
So do I. Just say you were battling some racist dude.
His voice is so quiet. What?
To kill a mockingbird, he says.
To kill... Oh, you mean the book?
Yeah, Connor says. At the end, remember? Jem and Scout are running away from that redneck guy. He breaks Jem's arm. It's like a battle wound.
Most of us read To Kill a Mockingbird freshman year. I'm just surprised that Connor actually read it, and I'm also surprised that he wants to talk to me about it right now and so calmly. After collecting his hair behind his ear, he spots something.
No one signed your cast.
I take a hard look at my hard cast. Still blank. Still pathetic. Connor shrugs.
I'll sign it.
Oh. My gut says retreat. You don't have to.
Do you have a Sharpie?
I want to say no, but my hand betrays me by reaching into my bag and presenting the Sharpie. Connor bites off the cap and lifts up my arm. I look away, but I can still hear the squeak of the pen against my cast, individual sounds stretching out longer than you'd expect. Connor seems to be treating each letter like its own mini Picasso.
Voila,
Connor says, evidently completing his masterpiece. I look down. There, on the side of my cast that faces the world, stretching the entire length and reaching up to ridiculous heights, are 6 of the biggest capital letters I've ever seen. C-O-N-N-O-R. Connor nods, admiring his creation. I'm not about to burst his bubble.
Wow! Thank you. So much.
He spits the cap into his hand, slides it back onto the tip, and hands over the marker.
Now we can both pretend we have friends.
I'm not exactly sure how to take this comment. How does Connor know that I don't have friends? Is it because he has no friends and he recognizes me as one of his kind? Or is he just assuming it because no one else has signed my cast? Or is it possible that he knows something about me? That would mean I made an impression on him.
Sure, making an impression on Connor Murphy isn't ideal, and the impression I made on him isn't a flattering one. But still, it's an impression. And if a certain someone were actually trying to follow his therapist's advice and focus on the bright side, this development could be seen as something of a modest victory. Good point, I say. By the way, Connor says, reaching for a piece of paper tucked under his arm, is this yours? I found it on the printer. Dear Evan Hansen, that's you, right? I'm screaming inside. Oh, that? That's nothing. It's just this writing thing I do. You're a writer? No, not really. It's not, like, for pleasure. He reads more and his expression changes. Because there's Zoe? He looks up, a cold stare. Is this about my sister? His lips tighten, and I see now that our momentary connection is broken. I step back. Your sister? Who's your sister? No, it's not about her. With one menacing stride, he swallows the space between us. I'm not fucking dumb. I never said you were. But you thought it, Connor says. No. Don't fucking lie. I know what this is. You wrote this because you knew that I would find it. What? You saw that I was the only other person in the computer lab, so you wrote this, and you printed it out so I would find it. I look around the lab. Why would I do that? So I would read some creepy shit you wrote about my sister and freak out, right? No, wait, what? And then you can tell everyone that I'm crazy, right? No, I didn't. He shoves a stiff finger between my eyes. Fuck you. I'm expecting those two words to come with a red exclamation point. Something painful. But they actually land weak. He turns around and heads for the exit. He doesn't think I'm worth the effort. I couldn't agree more. Anyway, I'm grateful. I'm not sure I could survive another fall today. The air releases from my lungs, my body loosening. But the relief I feel lasts only a second. As I watch Connor Murphy stalk out, I call after him, but he's too fast. Clenched in his fist as he slips out the door is a totally different kind of red exclamation point. He still has my letter. Chapter 4. My foot is a weed whacker. I'm kicking at a patch of grass that's overtaken a curb at my bus stop. Underclassmen watch with worry and wonder. I know worry and wonder when I see it. They might take me for a grass hater. Not in the slightest. It's just that my medication isn't doing anything for me this morning. I can't calm down. I'm about to face the firing squad, and there's nothing I can do about it. I begged my mom to let me stay home from school, but convincing a nurse that you're sick demands powers of persuasion I just don't possess. Truth is, I do feel sick. I checked the time every hour last night. 1:11, 2:47, 3:26. When my alarm finally sounded this morning, it felt like I'd just fallen asleep. Dr. Sherman wasn't any help. I ended up going to the session yesterday, took the bus all the way out there after school. I typed up a new letter that sounded upbeat and inoffensive, and watched as Dr. Sherman read it on my laptop without comment. I did attempt honesty. I spoke in a vague way about a certain issue that I'm struggling with. Someone took something from me, I told Dr. Sherman. Something private, and I'm worried what might happen if I don't get it back. Let's play this out, Dr. Sherman said. If this item isn't returned to you, what's the worst that could happen? True answer. Connor posts my letter online for the whole school to see, including Zoe, and now everyone knows that I write embarrassingly earnest letters to myself, which is just bizarre and disturbing, and all the days that were already an effort to get through become even more of a slog, and I feel even more alone and inconsequential than I already feel, which I didn't think was possible when I began my senior year yesterday. The answer I gave Dr. Sherman? I don't know. So far, though, from what I can tell, The worst has not happened. Yet. There's no sign of my letter online. I searched my name and nothing new came up. No one's talking about it. Jared Kleinman's last post. Just gave myself a Dutch oven. Alana Beck wrote, "In Africa and Asia, children walk an average of 3.7 miles each day to collect water." Rocks liked a photo of a swimsuit model and started following the breakfast cereal Frosted Flakes. Another food comes to mind. Mashed potatoes. Last year there was a fight during lunch between Rita Martinez and Becky Wilson. No one knows how it started, but everyone remembers what Rita said to Becky before she jumped on top of her. "I'm going to stick these mashed potatoes up your..." Rita garbled her last word, so it's unclear whether she was referring to Becky's front door or back, but it hardly mattered. A movement began. People started sending mashed potatoes to Becky's house. They'd mime explicit mashed potato acts at lunch. In our school, if you want someone to back off, you can just say, "mashed potatoes," or you can use the cloud emoji, which is the closest visual match. The letter that Connor stole from me is my mashed potatoes. It'll never die if it gets out. It will follow me wherever I go. The bus turns the corner. I give my foot a break and start to wonder if my concept of the worst that could happen is naive and uninspiring. Maybe I'm not thinking like a true sociopath. What if Connor chose to go a more old-school route? For example, he could have printed up physical copies of my letter and stuffed them inside every student's locker. Or maybe he's at school right now, personally handing them out as my classmates enter the building. It makes perfect sense. He thinks my letter was setting him up to look crazy, and now, to get back at me, he will make it clear to everyone at school that the person who's really crazy here is the one writing weird letters to himself. This guy, Evan Hansen. I step onto the bus, unsure if it's the engine that's rumbling or my insides. No fanfare as I slink down the aisle to my seat. The kid in the row across from me is horizontal, snoring. The bus lumbers forward. T-minus 10 minutes until my execution. Or maybe sooner. Laughter draws my eyes away from my phone. Two rows ahead, a kid is cracking up. He leans across the aisle and presents his phone to his buddy. The buddy takes the phone. "No way," he says to his friend. Now they're both laughing. This is it. The worst that could happen. Connor must have timed his attack for precisely this moment, when I was already on my way to school. He really is a maniacal genius. Any second now, these kids will turn around and gawk at the saddest loser on the planet. I close my eyes and prepare to open them to a new nightmare. But all I see when I finally look is the buddy handing the kid's phone back, and the bus returning to its former quiet. Later, when I exit the bus, there are no photocopies with my name on them being distributed, no flyers flashing my face. Still, I can't catch my breath as I walk up the concrete path and through the metal doors at the school. What sort of dark surprise awaits me on the other side? English. No tragedies. Calculus. No problems. Chemistry. No explosions. I make it to lunch unscathed. You'd think I'd be relieved, but no. The anticipation is murdering me. I just want it to be over already. The cafeteria is where my first altercation with Connor occurred. Finishing me off in this same place would provide our saga with a fitting symmetry. Besides, a true showman would want to take advantage of this large and hungry audience. Which begs the question, why am I here? To which there is only one answer. I don't know. The choices always seem to be fight or flight, but I typically end up somewhere in between, doing exactly neither. I stay, and I take the beating. I creep along the back wall, partly searching for a safe table, but mostly scanning the room for Connor. No sign of him. I sit and eat. I try to. My teeth snap into a baby carrot and the sound echoes in my head like a gunshot. I swallow the one piece of carrot, and that's all I'm hungry for. Because as I'm sitting here, something occurs to me. Something unsettling. Not only have I not seen Connor today, but I haven't seen Zoe either. Connor's absence by itself isn't unusual, but Zoe being out on the very same day? It's not like the Murphys would have scheduled a family vacation.